Okay, if you've been with us on Sunday mornings, you know that we've been talking about a little bit Simon and the heart. You may remember that he tries to buy not just the Holy Spirit, but he tries to buy the power to transmit the Holy Spirit to others. And Peter says, you do not have part, you do not have lot in this ministry. Your heart is not right with God. Now, as you look at the word heart, that is, as you look at our sheet, a very important word in the Bible. It's also a very common word. I guess I got the B there, but didn't finish that up. Anyway, when you look at the various body parts in the Bible, sometimes you have a reference to the eyes, the hands, the ears, the feet, and so forth. So just about every part that we can think of, the tongue, you have just about a reference to every part that we can think of, but the heart stands out. It is distinctive for some reasons. Number one, it's distinctive because it's mentioned more than any other part in the Bible. If you look at a standard English translation, King James, ASV, New American Standard, and so forth, ESV, you will find that the word heart is used more than 800 times, likely, in your Bible, and that's totaling together the Old Testament and the New. As you might expect, you find sometimes where the word heart is used literally. You know, that organ, which we consider to be a very important organ, or you sometimes hear about a person saying that we have heart issues. You find some Old Testament references, especially 2 Samuel chapter 18 and verse 14, darts were thrust through the heart. So I don't know that we need to run that reference necessarily, but you do find sometimes the word being used literally. But generally, you're going to find that word used in a sense where it doesn't describe the physical heart that we think of, the thing that's associated with blood, but it's going to describe the core, the center, the basis for who we are. That would be the body, the soul, the mind, the inner part of who we are. We sometimes hear, and you've got a reference there in the sheet, getting to the heart of the matter. We're talking about the center, the core, not the peripheral stuff, but let's get down to the nitty-gritty. Let's get down to what really matters. And you can see that kind of reference in Exodus chapter 15 and verse 18. There you have a passage which talks about the heart, the center of the sea, and so forth. And again, we'll not take a look at that passage. But we will look at a couple of references, Proverbs 16, verse 9, and also Proverbs chapter 25 and verse 3. So let's head somebody back to Proverbs, Proverbs 16 and verse 9. Who wants to read that for us in a minute or two? Proverbs 16, verse 9. Bonnie? And then we'll also take a look at the Proverbs. Once again, this time, Proverbs chapter 25 and verse 3. 25:3. Who wants to take care of that one for us? All right, that'll be Stan. We start with Proverbs chapter 26 and verse 9. Okay, now let's think about that verse for a second. What devises his way? The heart. And what does devising the way mean? Devising the way. All right, a man is thinking about, or a woman, is thinking about planning, thinking about doing something. They are trying to lay out a course of action. Well, we might plan all kinds of things in the heart, the mind, the center of who we are. But what's the end of the verse say? Yeah, so you might plan this, that, and the other thing, but that may not be how it works out. Remember James? He talked about the people who said, we're going to go into the city, we're going to buy and sell, and we're going to be there a year. And James says, guess what? You don't know what's going to be on the morrow. So you can't plan day number one, let alone 365 days out. But that's where, when we think about plans, they center in the heart. And some of those plans are obviously good. People think about some things that they want to do, how they want to help somebody, how they want to aid somebody. I rode up with Palmer's to the funeral yesterday, and on the way back, we were talking about the fellow, the 20-year-old who won, what was it, $400 million? Anybody see that story? Yeah. I mean, it was a bunch. He took about 200 and some odd million, took the big payout. And if you saw that report, he said, I want to do some good with some of the money that I've won. And there are some plans in the heart. And then you also have some evil plans that people decide that they're going to get revenge, or they're going to murder someone, or they're going to hurt someone, they're going to damage your reputation, whatever it might be. But that's where planning comes from, Proverbs 16 and verse 9. Now, if that's true, then you would think trying to read or discern that person's heart would be easier hard to see what's in a person's heart. Yeah, it kind of depends. We can sometimes get a pretty good sense, especially if a person is angry and they say what's in their heart, say what's on their mind. We have a pretty good understanding that they're obviously not very happy with us or someone else. But let's take a look at that next reference. This is going to come from point number 7 on our sheet, Proverbs chapter 25 and verse 3.
The heaven for height and the earth for depth, and the heart of kings is unsearchable.
Now that's kind of an interesting verse. The heart of the king or the heart of the ruler is unsearchable. You can't go in there and understand everything that's going on. Why would he make that statement about kings, people who are in power? Can't know what's in the guy's heart.
Well, one thing, their job causes them to change their mind a lot depending on the constituents they
yeah.
have. They're always trying to please their people.
Mm-hmm. When you look at a ruler, they're thinking about some things that we don't have to think about. And one of those items might be the constituency that they have. Others, in our case with our president, what about, you think he gets a briefing on a regular basis? When I was in the military, one of the things that happened with the base commander, in the old days before PowerPoint, you remember the transparency slides? I was, the base commander came to a restricted building that I worked in every day. And they needed a slide flipper. And they looked at me and another guy and they thought, well, we think that you would be pretty good slide flippers. So they had one fella, maybe a major or captain, who came in and he gave a weather briefing. There was someone who else, another guy came in and he gave a briefing on maybe some world events. Then there was another guy who came in and he gave a briefing on the operational status of the base. And there were probably about eight different guys, eight different officers, who were all, you know, somewhat junior officers, usually a captain or major, maybe a lieutenant colonel. And they would all assemble in this special room. They all would have their slides. And they would come in and they would say, well, okay, you know, Brad, I'm the weather guy for today, and here are my slides, and here are my slides, and here are my slides. And I and another guy had been handpicked to go in there and be the slide flipper. And you didn't want to foul it up. I mean, you're flipping for the colonel or the general. And I suspect that there were some times where we probably got it wrong and he was patient. But you would want to make sure that those slides got put on in the right order. And, you know, you were kind of controlling the old style PowerPoint. And, you know, he's getting all that information because things change. Sometimes it was a weather matter and you get all that information. And you can't discern all that's going on in his heart. Well, he makes that point about the king, but wouldn't that be true of others as well? You can't, for the most part, really discern what's going on. What about in a child's heart? Are there some things maybe in a child's heart that you can't discern? Yeah. I mean, maybe he's figuring out, hey, mom and dad are headed out for a little while, and I'm going to hit the cookie jar, whatever it might be. Now, you might be able to discern some of those things in advance or guess, but you really can't discern what's in the heart. I haven't forgotten about you, Ray. We're going to come back to your thought in a second. And then think about that other passage that's here that we know. Romans chapter 8 and verse 7. In talking about the Holy Spirit, Paul said he does what? He searches the heart. So even though we can't necessarily know all that might be in the heart of a king, the heart of a child, even the heart of a marital partner, best friend, God knows the heart because deity searches the heart.
I think you covered both of them. I was just going to say secrecy is of the king or of the president, whoever is in charge. We as the individuals out here do not have a need for that knowledge.
Correct. And some of that's classified information. So there, it's not necessarily just the president or just the king, but there would be some people in the kingdom or in the cabinet with how we have things set up that would be accessing and, like I say, giving that secret of information. And that briefing that I was giving, the same thing there. There was a door which had a special key lock on that, and you just didn't walk in. You had to have that probably was 3 or 4 digit combination number that you pushed in. It was an older style lock, but you still have that principle today. And if you have a need to know, then you can go in there. And I had to have a security clearance and whatnot. So, you know.
You see that in some businesses also. It's not just the king, but it's those in charge of business.
Yeah. The CEO or the plant manager, they have some information, and that's why they're going to call maybe a plant meeting and say, today there's been something that we're working on, and now this is time to discuss with the employees, and they do that. Exactly right. Anybody else? All right, is there anybody that likes a copy of the sheet? Okay, let's move down to point number 8, and let's pick up 3 references here. Psalm 90:12, Proverbs 3:5, Deuteronomy chapter 10 and 12, and let's get one more, Proverbs chapter 4 and verse 23. We have the word heart associated with some positive things in the Old Testament. Psalm 90:12, who wants responsibility for that one? Psalm 90, verse 12, Bonnie? Okay, and then we'll take a look at Proverbs 3 and verse 5. Steve, after that we'll see what we have in Deuteronomy 10 and verse 12. Deuteronomy 10, verse 12. Stan, we'll go back to you. And then we'll take a look at Proverbs chapter 4 and verse 23. Proverbs 4, verse 23. Who wants to get it for us? All right, Kitty, thank you. Let's go back to our Psalm 90, verse 12 reference.
So teach us to number our days that we may apply our hearts unto wisdom.
Okay, so we can have a heart that is associated with wisdom. What would you think a wise heart is? Remember again, the word heart as we've defined it is what? The heart is the center, the core, the basis for who we are. So if you have a wise heart, we might say a wise person. What are you going to see with that kind of individual?
Well, isn't this telling us to not just live for today, to number our days, that we can have a plan for our life?
All right.
To apply the wisdom that God gives us through the Word?
I'd say that's a great overall answer, that we've got a plan. We've got a wise heart, where we're not going to just kind of squander life or say, well, here's today, we'll see what happens. But we have thought about the fact that life is, it has a termination point as far as physical life, and we need to make sure that we use it correctly and wisely. Good thought. All right, let's take a look at that next reference, and that's going to be Proverbs chapter 3 and verse 5.
Trust in the Lord with all your heart, and lean not on your own understanding.
Okay, now that's also an interesting passage when we think about it from the perspective of heart. Trust in God how much? With all our heart. Now a lot of people will say, well, okay, if you've got an IRA, or you have some other kind of investment, chances are the broker has given you what kind of advice? Well, okay, I think that would be one piece of advice that you hear. That's always good advice. What else? Don't put all your what where? Don't put all your eggs in one basket. Well, he's obviously not talking about literal eggs and chickens. What's he talking about? You like GM stock? He says, well, that's fine, but don't do what? Don't put all your pennies and dollars in GM stock. You might put, let's make me third there, and then we're going to put 20% over here, 15% over here. We're going to allocate our assets, and we're going to make sure that they are divided up. Because if GM tanks, well, then, you know, Caterpillar or whatever you have, you've held some cash reserves back. That's going to help you. But when it comes to God, he says, you trust in me, how much? All. You make me your rock. And that's tough to do. Because especially in our society, we are tempted to trust in other things, maybe people. But God says, put your entire trust when it comes to the core of your being in me. And that is something that can be a lifelong challenge. Anything that you want to add or ask? Okay, we're down. Anybody that doesn't have a copy of the sheet? Okay, we're down now to point number 11. This is Deuteronomy chapter 10 and verse 12.
And now, Israel, what doth the Lord thy God require of thee, but to fear the Lord thy God, to walk in all his ways, and to love him, and to serve the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul.
Okay, so he expands on it a little bit here, and not only give him the heart, but when it comes to love, what's he say? Take your heart and love him. Going back again to where we were a minute ago, what does the heart describe? The basis of who we are. If you can boil us down and say, who, what, describe yourself. The heart is what it comes down to. And God says, you take the core of your being and you do what with it when it comes to love? You love me. Well, is that what we see with a lot of folks?
It says to serve him too.
Yeah, you've got the service in there as well. Is that what we see with a lot of people? When it comes to loving God, you find, I think, some people who would say, we tolerate God. There would be some other people who would say, well, our love for God is how much? Remember the illustration that we gave when it came to financial assets? We're going to allocate things. I believe that you would find some people who would allocate a certain part of their life as far as a love for God. We'll give you 1%, 5%, 10%, 20%. Somebody might feel really generous and say, God, we'll give you 50% of our love. Well, that might seem pretty generous to us. But what did God say? When you take your heart, you direct it all to me. And that's tough. That can really be a challenge. But when it comes to the heart, that's what God had to say. Anything that you want to add or ask on those points? Okay, let's take a look at Proverbs chapter 4 and verse 23. Ah, that's a familiar verse to a lot of us. But once again, let's pause and break it down a little bit. Do what with your heart? You keep it. Well, that word keep can mean a lot of things. How would you understand that verse in light of today's discussion?
Guard it.
Guard it. Protect it. Because once again, what's it do? This forms the core, the center of who you are. And if it is that important, if that's what it does, it deserves protection to the greatest possible degree. That's true for our kids, wouldn't it be? As they're coming up, as we're rearing them, protect, guard, maintain purity in the heart of that child to the best possible degree. We think about the heart, and I'm not going to run these references today, but you're going to find that joy comes from the heart. You're going to find that laughter comes from the heart. And then that third item, you'd also expect that what comes from the heart? Sorrow. You ever see people cry fake tears? You can see it. People can put on a pretty good act. You think people can fake joy? Yes. Oh, I'm so happy to see you. You know, and then they walk off and they start saying the things about you that they really feel. So you can fake those things. But what about when we say it comes from the heart? Even you'll find sometimes in cards, or you'll find sometimes a person is writing a note and you say, this comes from the heart. This comes from the deepest core of my being. I'm telling you this with all sincerity. Or you can see a person, I'm going to come back in a second, Steve. You ever see a person give you a hug? It's kind of like, okay. That doesn't feel like it came from the heart, does it? It feels like it was forced somehow. Give a kiss to grandma. Come here, kid. You know, maybe you've had some of those experiences. Well, that's not really a kiss from the heart. But you see, the other child runs to granny and wants to give her a kiss, wants to give her a hug, those kinds of things. It comes from the heart. So when you start looking at these emotions in the Bible, and there are a bunch of them, I didn't list them all. From the heart is what you oftentimes find. Steve?
You used the word I was going to say, sincerity. It's real. It's not a put on.
Yeah. Well, an apology too. And this is on the sheet a little bit later. But when you think about forgiveness, have you ever heard somebody or ever experienced somebody who say, I forgive you? When you hear that, what's your sense? What immediately goes through the head? You are not sincere. That didn't come from the heart. So we hear that. Even non-Christians say that. And they're getting that from someplace, ultimately, because somebody got it from the Bible. Anybody else? Bonnie? Okay, well, let's take a look at Exodus chapter 25 and verse 2. This is the last one under this section as far as some positive things associated with the heart in the Old Testament. Exodus 25, that second Old Testament book, 25:2. Who has it and wants to run the reference for us? Tim?
Speak unto the children of Israel that they bring me an offering of every man that hath a good willingly. With his heart ye shall take my offering.
Okay, with his heart. And the word that occurs before that is the key word, how. I want you to give willingly. Well, we often stress that principle in the New Testament from 2 Corinthians 8 and 2 Corinthians 9, and that's perfectly fine. But this is also possible to prove or establish from the Old Testament. God says when you give, when you worship, when you're involved with serving me, I want you to serve willingly. Now, take that and contrast that with some of the stuff that takes place today sometimes when people talk to others, or even if you have a preacher or Bible class teacher talking about worship. What do you sometimes find happen when it comes to teaching about worship? Well, let's go back and think through it. What was that key word? Exodus 25:2? Worship willingly. Do you think there's some teaching today which isn't directed in quite that way? When Sunday comes, you better show up, or it's a sin. Well, you can probably make that case. But wouldn't there be a better way to teach that? Love God with how much? All your heart. That's clear. If you do that, what's going to be one of the natural consequences? I'm not going to need to be goaded. I'm not going to need to be threatened. I'm not going to need to be prodded. I'm going to come. I'm going to do the best of my ability. Well, here comes the collection plate. I'm going to give my nickel today. Well, you might be able to push people to give more. But is that God's will? How much can you squeeze out of them? There are some religious groups that do that, don't they? Well, I mean, they will squeeze and they will press and they will just keep going and going till they've about emptied the pockets. And you might have some great numbers on the board. So as far as achieving maybe a certain level of financial contribution, you've done it. But what's God's will? I want you to come, and when your heart worships me, I want you to give willingly. I don't want you to go home feeling like, boy, they just, you know, robbed me today. Any thoughts on that? All right, let's move down and talk about a different section. Let's find some negative items associated with the heart in the Old Testament. Let's go back and look at three of them first. Proverbs 6:25. Let's skip Deuteronomy 1:28 because that talks about lack of courage, fear, those kinds of things. And Leviticus 19 and verse 17. Let's just take those first two. Proverbs 6:25. Who wants to do that? Steve? And then who wants to pick up for us Leviticus 19:17? Leviticus 19:17. All right, Bonnie. Proverbs 6:25.
Do not lust after her beauty in your heart, nor let her allure you with her eyelids.
Okay. Lust is a topic that's dealt with in the Bible. We certainly see it in the world. And as you look at the Old Testament writer, you find that it's associated once again with the heart. You're thinking that here is the core of a person. This is discussed from time to time. Let me put it in question form. Would you draw a distinction between lust and maybe a quick glance where somebody says, boy, he's hot, she's hot? Wow. You could be stating a fact, sure. There's a guy who is, I mean, all trim and buff. There's a girl, I mean, she's got the perfect shape. And you say, wow, look at her.
But that doesn't mean you're lusting.
Yeah, you could be, as you mentioned, a statement of fact. But then you've got some other people that do what?
Dwell on it.
Yeah, I mean, the eyes just about pop out. And I mean, that's all that they're looking at and all that they're thinking about. So when you think about lust, the Bible definitely associates it with the heart. And then Leviticus chapter 19 and verse 17. Okay, now that's also an interesting passage when you kind of tie it together with the lust. In the heart, can you be angry with somebody?
Yes.
Be upset with somebody?
Yes.
Can you really, you know, just kind of spout off and just really lay it on to somebody when it comes to giving them a verbal lashing? Yeah. But then that's still not, that's kind of like the lust. You know, there's that look, which not good. But it's not like the ogling that we were alluding to a moment ago. But then there's that hate. And when hate is in the heart, what's that like?
Horrible.
Yeah. But let's expand on that a little bit. What's it like? It is bad. But if we make that a little more specific, what do we mean? I hate you.
It's all consuming.
Yes. You're thinking about it. You're, how can I get back at that person? How can I destroy that person? How can I ruin their lives? And then ultimately that might lead to murder. And that's why I say when that gets into the core, it's almost like cancer. Somebody says, I have cancer. Well, one of the things that I think about is how far has it gone? Has it got into where? Has it got into the other organs? And once that gets into the other organs, it's bad. And there's a similar thing true in the spiritual realm. If you allow that core to be tainted, if you allow that core to be so affected with things like lust and hate and greed and anger, remember back there in Proverbs 4, do what to the heart? Issues of life? Guard, protect, maintain, for from it proceeds the issues of life. If you taint the core, it's like tainting the water source. You can have somebody put a glass of water on the counter and somebody comes along and drops some rat poison in it. Is that necessarily going to kill you?
Probably.
Well, no, wait. It's just on your counter. Is that necessarily going to kill you?
Oh, no, as long as it stays on
the
counter.
Yeah. You could dump it down the drain or you could pour it outside. But if you go and you taint your water source, your well, or the water that's coming in as far as the public utility source, you start dumping rat poison in there. You go to the source, to the fountainhead, now you have a problem. And that's what we're also talking about in the spiritual realm when it comes to the heart. Well, you can now begin to take this and tie it back into Acts chapter 8. Peter comes along and says to Ananias, thy heart is not right with God. when you begin to have an understanding of just how significant the heart is, you can understand, I think, or better appreciate why Peter came down on Simon so hard. Because, like I say, if that inner core is being affected and he didn't get that fixed, that was going to be a serious, serious problem. Any thoughts that you have on what we've said thus far? Okay, we've got about 17 minutes left. Let's see how much more of this we can get. Proverbs 6:14, Proverbs 12:20, Proverbs 19:3. Let's have somebody skip to all those. We'll give you some time in between the references. Exodus 4:21, and then we'll also get Proverbs 23:17. So if you're willing to be our first reader, I'll have you read three passages, but I'll break those up a little bit so you'll have plenty of time to get to each one. Who wants to take responsibility for that? Proverbs 6:14 is where you'd start. Stan, I'll start with that. Proverbs 6:14, and then we'll also look at Exodus 4:21. Who wants to help us out there? Exodus 4:21. Betty, thank you. And then Proverbs 23:17. Steve. Okay, Stan, let's go back to you. Let's start with Proverbs 6 and verse 14. What can or does the heart do?
Frowardness is in the heart. He devises mischief continually. He soweth discord.
Okay, so when you think about the heart, what kind of stuff can come from it?
Mischief.
Discord, and that ties back to what we were saying just a little bit ago. People decide some bad stuff, and that's coming from the heart. You think about the bully. Anybody ever meet up with a bully? Work? School? Neighborhood? How often is a bully a bully? You think, well, he's the bully. You don't say, well, he's the bully on Monday. He's the bully once a month. When you think about the bully, he's the bully all the time. Why? Because his heart, his core, is focused on the kinds of things that we talked about. That's where he lives, and that's what you expect from him. All right, Stan, we're going to come back to you in a little bit. Proverbs 12 and verse 20, 12:20, but let's take a look at Exodus 4:21 next. Betty, was that you? 4:21, uh-huh. Okay, that builds on what we've said thus far. You have this heart where it's been affected in a negative way, and now it becomes hardened. How does a heart become hardened? Right?
Practicing the wrong thing.
Okay.
It's like doing anything else. If you don't think of the good things, you always think of the evil things. It's just going to get worse and worse.
Yeah, you begin to enter into that pattern, and it solidifies after a while. Would the opposite be true? When we think about a hardened heart, we think about hardening in a negative sense. But wouldn't the flip side be true?
Put the good things into the heart.
Yes. So it works one of two ways, positively or negatively. And somehow that heart is going to be headed in one of two directions. And if you start off on the wrong course, you see that with kids. You see parents that are doing some poor things when it comes to raising their kids, and they're allowing that heart to worsen and worsen and worsen. And what do people say? When that child grows up, where's he going to go? He's going to be in prison. Or he's going to be a bum. Or he's going to be this, that, and the other thing. Why do they make those conclusions? Because they have not helped guard or protect that child's heart. And it goes back to that. So when you think about being an influence with kids and grandparents, try to protect, try to guard their heart. Proverbs 12:20. Let's go back to you, Stan.
Deceit is in the heart of them that imagine evil, but to the counselors of peace is joy.
Okay. As you start thinking about the heart, this is one of the items, one of the aspects that we've not looked at yet. What can be in the heart? Deceit. I want to lie, I want to trick, I want to deceive, I want to lead astray. If that's where a heart has been hardened and molded to, well, again, you're dealing with a person that you, after you have a little bit of interaction, you probably think, I can never trust him. He's shafted me, he's cheated me, he's not been honest with me, And again, it goes back to a heart problem. Proverbs 19:3 in a little bit, but before that, let's take a look at Proverbs chapter 23 and verse 17.
Do not let your heart envy sinners, but be zealous for the fear of the Lord all the day.
That's an interesting verse too, isn't it? Don't let your heart do what? Envy who? Sinners. Do you think some people envy sinners?
Yes.
How and why? How would somebody envy a sinner?
Why can't I do that?
Yeah.
Why can't I act like that?
Yes. And what would be some of the specific activities?
I was going to say, whatever the sinner is doing to that evil, whether it's prodding somebody, or whether it's becoming a step on this person to make an advancement or whatever. Whatever they do that, we might envy somebody that, boy, I wish I was like that.
Move up faster in the work world, or I could treat people like that. You've seen some of the sexual harassment claims lately. And you think, boy, I couldn't even do, you know, I couldn't even say, you look nice today to a woman in the office, or to a man who comes in and he's dressed well. Or I'm afraid to, touch them because they might say sexual harassment. You know, they just lost a family member or something. And yet, you know, here's the guy down the hall. You know, he's, well, hey, you know, I saw you bend over in the skirt or whatever. Your pants are too tight today to the guy. And they get away with all that stuff. And you think, if I did a fraction of that, I'd be toast. So that would be one way to maybe not envy a sinner, but to look at them and think, boy, I sure wish that, you know, there would be a little more freedom there for me. What else? People envy sinners. All right. Sometimes you look at how they got the money or how they have a lot more than you may have. And again, envy can begin to rear its head. Anything else? Envy the sinner. Yes. Yeah. Look at how they live, and it seems like they never get in trouble. Cops never come. And for me, if my lawn is, 2 inches, they're going to send out the grass patrol police. But yes, it seems like they can just skate through life and avoid any kind of consequence. And, you know, we get dinged for every little thing. Goes back to the heart. Got to watch it. Got to protect it. Stan and then Bunny.
Well, I think there's a directive there that precedes that that just adds strength to it. And I believe it was Paul was talking about those who took pleasure in the sins of others. I don't recall what that verse is. But so he said, don't do that. So, and a lot of times I think that's what happens to us. We look at something, oh, that's fun. And then, why can't I have that?
Mm-hmm.
And then that leads to the envy.
So. Yeah. Stop it in the heart. Don't envy those guys in the heart. We're going to hit you up for Proverbs 19 and verse 3 in a second, but Bonnie will take your thought now.
Comfortable on the couch with that.
Sure.
So you might be tempted to not go to worship service.
Yeah, there could be, and it may not just be that. Neighbors, whoever it might be, but you're thinking, boy, you know, it's been a 6-day work week, or I've really struggled, or I haven't been feeling that great. These guys can stay home, and I sure wish I could stay home today. There's something about the Christian life which would be a lot easier if I was living like them. So again, it covers a lot of territory. But again, it goes back to guarding. It goes back to watching your heart. Betty, did you have a thought or just... Okay, let's pick up Exodus 4:21. We didn't get that one yet, did we? No, Stan, we're back to you. I'm sorry. Proverbs 19:3.
The foolishness of man perverted his way, and his heart fretteth against the Lord.
Okay, I had not heard the word fret in a long time. And sure enough, Tina comes to the funeral yesterday and she uses the word fret. I thought, well, good for you did. What's it mean to her? I guess I was just thinking about that word. She talked about being a fretful person. What's it mean to be a fretful person?
Worrisome.
Worrisome. Read the verse again, Stan, if you would.
The foolishness of man perverteth his way, and his heart fretteth against the Lord.
Okay. His heart frets against the Lord. Here's a fellow who doesn't have the right kind of confidence in God, and he's the fellow who's the worrywart. So we don't hear the word fret too often, but we do hear the words fret and anxiety. And again, a heart can be filled, consumed with worry, can it? But that's going to be the opposite. Remember, trust in the Lord, how much? With all the heart. So if you've got a heart which says, I trust in God, I'm so worried, that really doesn't jive. And when somebody tells you that, what's winning out really? They're telling you this, but what's really true?
The worry.
The worry is winning out. So when it comes to the heart, it's really, really important to try to maintain that, control that, and direct that, because that is the center, that's the core of who we are. And that's going to be a lifelong struggle. It's a little bit like what Paul said in Romans chapter 7, I want to do this, but sometimes you do that. So getting the heart headed in the right direction, keeping it headed in the right direction is a real challenge. Jeremiah, and again, I think you're probably familiar with this reference, he says, the heart is, anybody remember? Deceitful above
all things.
Very good. And that's right. Because we think, oh, my heart is really attuned. It's headed in the right direction. And all of a sudden, something like worry or the envy of sinners, it pops up. It rears its ugly head. And then we are reminded that we're not maybe quite as strong as we thought. All right, the word is certainly associated with some positive things in the New Testament. Matthew 18 and verse 35, we alluded to this earlier. I believe this is the text where Jesus said, forgiveness must come from where? It must come from the heart. And that's what we want. If we're truly going to forgive someone, if we're truly going to say, I've let that go, we want to make sure that that comes from the heart. When you look at the parable of the seed in Luke chapter 8, verses 11 through 15, you have at least a couple of points there. Jesus talked about the seed, it's sown, the devil wants to take it along, devil wants to come along and take it from where? He wants to snatch it from the heart. Do you think sometimes that the seed really doesn't get into the heart of somebody? It just doesn't make it down that far? It's kind of like it's there on the surface, and maybe a person has kind of an initial, a surface-based response. But we really want to see if that... the same thing can happen. Anybody ever planted a garden? Okay, and you've got some seed. It's been a long time since I planted any, but I'm thinking the carrot seed is supposed to be down at least a few inches. Stan, would you agree? Carrot seed?
Well, not that particular one.
All right, give me a seed that needs to be down a few
corn.
Inches. Corn, okay. All right. I always thought corn was in a hill, but we planted in a hill. But anyway, okay, your corn seed needs to be down a few inches. But you just start throwing some corn seed on top of the ground. It's probably not going to work out that well. And that's sometimes how it works with people. You want to see if you can get that seed down deep. The devil knows that and he tries to snatch that away. And then Jesus, remember he talked about in the four soils, he says there is the good and there is the honest. You should be able to guess the last word. Heart, remember? That's what we're looking at. All right, then we have Matthew chapter 5 and verse 8. Jesus said, blessed are the pure in heart, for they're going to be the ones who see God. And then Paul associated with the word heart with salvation in Romans chapter 10 and verse 9. Thou shalt confess that Jesus is the Christ, believe in thy heart that God has raised him from the dead. He said, thou shalt be saved. That, of course, is not an entire statement about the plan of salvation. Then you have some information in the New Testament when it comes to the heart and some negative stuff. Let's take a look at Matthew 15, 19, Matthew chapter 13 and verse 15. And if there's time, we'll look at Mark chapter 11, verse 23. John, 1 John 3, 20, 21, associates the word heart with the aspect of our being, which is also the conscience. So heart and conscience do have a connection. Matthew 15, 19, who wants to take care of that for us quickly? Matthew 15, verse 19. Bonnie, and then we'll take a look at Matthew 13, 15. Brian, and then if we have time, we'll look at Mark 11 and verse 23. Mark 11, verse 23. Betty, thank you. All right, let's take a look at Matthew 15, verse 19.
For out of the heart proceed evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witness, blasphemies.
Okay, do you think Jesus could have added some more stuff, or do you believe that this is an exhaustive list? Yeah, there's a long list, and he certainly could have gone on, but this is enough to say, look, when it comes to the heart, you've got not only evil actions such as these coming from the heart, but what else is going to come from the heart? You've got evil thoughts. So there's some people who say, well, I thought about killing him. You think that was true? Yeah, there were some people who thought about killing him. Now, they didn't do it. They didn't hurt him in any way. It was just in the mind. But where did that come from? It came from the heart. Here's the person who said, I wasn't going to fix him supper. Well, that probably wasn't the kindest thought, but some people thought that very thing. And again, that came from the heart. So that's why it's so important, so critical to guard the heart. All right, let's take a look at Matthew chapter 13 and verse 15. Brian?
For this people's heart is waxed gross, and their ears are dull of hearing, their eyes are they closed. Thus, at any time they should see with their eyes and hear with their ears, they should understand with their heart, and should be converted, and I should heal them.
Thank you. Now, here's a passage which refers to multiple body parts. And Jesus used multiple body parts to say that these people, they're messed up spiritually. They're not headed in the right direction. But I heard the word heart at least two times in that verse. If your heart is not right, what do you think is going to happen when it comes to your ears, spiritually speaking? You're not going to hear. You're just not going to be headed in the right direction. Was there somebody that said something?
Deterioration of the body.
Yes, it is. And unless you go in and get that fixed, you're going to have some major issues. All right, we do have time to take a look at Mark chapter 11, verse 23. We've got just a couple minutes left.
22?
It could be 22. I may have gotten it wrong.
And Jesus answering said to them, have faith in God.
Is that 23?
No, that's 22.
Okay, and then read 23 as well, if you would. That is a great verse to end on when we think about negative items about heart in the New Testament. Here's a person who says, look, I've become a Christian, I go to worship, I'm doing all these things, but you know, when I pray, that just seems to be a matter that's too big for God. I'm just not sure God could do this. I'm not sure that he would be interested in me. I'm not sure. You can just go down the list. If there's doubt in the heart, is that a problem? It is. And that can be a tough thing to root out. But that's one of the items that we want to see that we can get rid of. We want to see if we can take an inventory of our heart, find out what's good, keep that there, strengthen that, build on that, and look for bad things in the heart and get rid of them. That's what we want to do in the real world, isn't it, too? When it comes to the physical heart, we want to make it strong, we want to make it good. The things that would damage a healthy heart, get rid of them. Glenda, and then Betty.